WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. Let me read you an excerpt of Robert Brustein's column in the current issue of The New Republic. He writes, "Beginning in the Carter years and intensifying during the Reagan and Bush administrations, a covert, undeclared war was launched and waged against the high arts. This action has culminated in a major retreat, in the surrender of most of the standards and the values that make a serious culture possible. Anti-art forces advance by means of a three-pronged incursion from the right, the left, and the center, all claiming endorsement from the majority." Well, pretty provocative stuff, so we called up Brustein, and he took time out from his vacation to talk with us. Brustein is theater critic for The New Republic, the founder and artistic director of American Repertory Theater, and a professor at Harvard. We've been hearing a lot about the culture war. Patrick Buchanan referred to it at the Republican convention. I asked Brustein if he thinks there's a culture war underway.
I don't think there's a culture war so much as a war on culture, and Pat Buchanan represents one of the elements in that war on culture, the right-wing element, which I think, having lost their favorite stalking horse and the Communist Party, they're now turning on the artist and identifying the artist as subversive or homosexual or obscene or in some way opposed to family values or in some way just opposed to the American way of life. And I think that's a very serious mistake on their parts. They're really undercutting what is unique and imaginative and individual in our culture.
Well, the argument that you make in The New Republic is that the arts are under attack by the right and by the left and by the center. So let's look at the argument that you're making about this attack from three different directions. Let's look at the attack from the right. Would you sum up what you see the attack as being?
It's an effort to enforce content restrictions on any grants that are given by the National Endowment for the Arts. This effort has already been declared unconstitutional by a federal judge in Los Angeles in the Bella Lewitsky case, which chided the National Endowment for responding and bending to this pressure and saying that, you know, the agency has no right to impose content restrictions, that this indeed is a restriction of the First Amendment rights of artists. So I think from the right, we see very clearly the effort to restrict the arts and the artists by imposing these moral and aesthetic judgments on the art before without any knowledge whatsoever of what they're doing.
Well, this has been going on for a while. What impact have you seen it had already on American culture?
Well, it's had an impact insofar as the endowment in its recent history has been overruling the decisions of panels and canceling grants. That has sent a shudder and a chill through the artistic community. Clearly, it's going to have two effects. It's either going to make artists more reticent and safer and more conventional in the way they approach their work, or it's going to make them more provocative than they would care to be. And either way, really, they're not focusing on the kind of work they want to do. And that and other sources of pressure have really been responsible for a general drawing in on the part of arts that I see in this country, in which they're getting more conventional, they're getting safer, they're getting less adventurous, and people, the audiences, I think, are getting afraid too.
What do you think are the pressures on the arts coming from the left?
Well, from the left, we have a rather warm-hearted, but I think misguided, effort to democratize the arts. And the arts, I'm afraid, are not a democracy. The artist represents what is unique and idiosyncratic and different and individual in the human character and the human soul, and not what is representational. And this is also a problem of the NEA, and it's a problem of private funding agencies as well, that they are trying to spread their support for the arts geographically in the case of the NEA, and ethnically and racially and sexually on behalf of the NEA and also these private funding agencies. And as a result, there's a kind of democratization going on that is not recognizing and rewarding quality. And this comes under the rubric of cultural diversity or multiculturalism. And lest I not be mistaken, I'm very much in favor of cultural diversity. I think it's one of the great sources of refreshment and energy and artistry in this country. But when it becomes a source of self-esteem, as it were, rather than of quality, when it is initiated in order to make people feel good rather than in order to develop the highest forms of arts, then I'm having trouble with it. And I think a number of people are beginning to have trouble with it because it does not reflect an effort to improve the nature of art in this country, but rather to improve the nature of self-esteem and self-awareness and how we feel about ourselves, which is a sociological effort, not an artistic one.
You could make the argument that when groups have been excluded from mainstream culture for a long time, that it's okay for society to go out of its way to include them, to help fund them so that they can express the voice which has been suppressed for so long. Do you find any truth in that argument?
I find truth in the argument. I don't think it benefits the arts. I think it, once again, is a political, sociological, and possibly economic benefit. I'm not even sure of that. But I would also say that if there were a lot of money for the arts in this country, and as you probably know, there's only 68 cents per capita being contributed to the arts in this country by every citizen. $170 million goes to the NEA as compared with billions of dollars in European countries. Then there's very little to go around. And unless this is a national endowment for the arts rather than for all the other things that it claims is being forced to be for the advancement of people, as it were, or the advancement of cultures, or the advancement of people's self-esteem, then the low man and woman on the totem pole is going to be the artist. So I think if there was a lot of money, we could include a lot of things. But since there's very little money, I think we have to focus the money on what we think are qualified and quality arts, and we're not doing that.
So what kind of artist do you think is getting shut out of the funding now?
Well, I think what we used to call the high arts, not shut out of the funding. I mean, there's still funding for the high arts, but the high arts are sharing this with a large variety of enterprises. The endowment proudly boasts that it has financially assisted Hmong needlework, coastal seagrass basketry, Southeast Alaska dance, native dance, American Indian basketry and woodcraft, Pacific Island canoe building, and Appalachian banjo playing. I'm reading from a recent TV broadcast that was made promoting the NEA. Now, you know, this is a start, but why leave out White House stonewalling or Venice Beach snorkeling or hillbilly belly scratching? I mean, this, we're now not talking about the arts at all. We're talking about artifacts. We're talking about crafts. And under this rubric of regional, sexual, racial, and ethnic pride, we enter a thorny thicket, which seems to leave out the artist who is a dedicated human being whose race could be anything, whose sex could be anything, but is devoted really to opening up the uncharted areas of human experience.
Well, just to be fair here, I mean, I don't know that it's fair to compare Hmong basket weaving with hillbilly belly scratching. I mean, one is a real kind of serious craft of potentially great beauty.
It is a craft. It's not an art. And I was, of course, being facetious. But the wide range of focus really narrows the possibilities, as I say, of support for the starving and dwindling arts, because the state government is disappearing in its support. The private philanthropy is focusing almost exclusively on multicultural and incremental grants that don't help institutions or artists except to extend their work into areas that they are assumed not to be sufficiently focusing on. And as a result, the kind of arts that need public support and private support are being pushed aside. So I don't mean to in any way diminish the potential beauty of Hmong needlework, compared with the work of Picasso and Stravinsky and Joyce and Shakespeare, you know, it's not of the greatest consequence.
Let me get back to Hmong needlework for a moment.
All right.
Could you say that the argument you're making is an ethnocentric argument, that the individual artist should be funded and not the Hmong needleworker, because that's not really art, that's craft, but art might have a different expression in other cultures than it does in American culture?
I think that in most great cultures, and even in cultures that are marked by cultural diversity and multiculturalism, the great artists are those that speak not to special groups and special interests, but rather to the general understanding of humanity. One reason for reading the classics is that they widen and deepen our experience, pulling us out of the all-too-visible limits that any single self is likely to have. Now, it strikes me that that is not what we're experiencing at the present time. We are not trying to widen and deepen our experience. We are trying to focus in on single selfhood. And ultimately, I think this is an extension of a narcissistic culture, that everyone wants to be expressive, as it were, and nobody wants to be judged as to the quality of their expression.
My guest is theater critic Robert Brustein. He's also a professor at Harvard and artistic director of the American Repertory Theater. More after the short break. This is Fresh Air. Robert Brustein is my guest. Let's get to the center, and you say that the center is, in its own way, attacking the arts, or at least the fine arts. What problem do you see coming from the center?
I think this is a problem that is an old problem, but it's just beginning to reemerge, and that is the age-old war between the so-called middle brow and the highbrow. Even the use of these terms, of course, is antique. Even to use the terms is to be accused of being elitist, and I think the word elitism and elite has been abused in recent time in order to, as it were, submerge and suppress and cast aspersions on the development of high, what I call high art or the fine arts. Because the original meaning of the word elite was simply leadership. And now that it's meant to be exclusive or snobbish, it has effectively canceled out the notion of leadership in the arts. And without leadership in the arts, we have no vision in the arts. And without vision in the arts, we have no arts.
Is it possible that your reaction against multiculturalism, the way it's envisioned by many people in America, is a reaction of a white guy who is now reacting to cultures different than his own? Because so much of, like the canon has been white male over the years.
Actually, I respond very favorably to cultures other than my own. As a critic, I have been one of the great supporters of works like Juan Darien, which is a multicultural work in the true sense. Julie Taymor's work was an Indonesian-style puppet show, which is driven by South American music and based on a Latin liturgical text and a Uruguayan fable by Horacio Quiroga. Lee Brewer's The Gospel of Colonus was a recreation of Sophocles' Oedipus at Colonus, but it was set in the Pentecostal black church. It had gospel music, rousing gospel music.
But it was all filtered through the sensibilities of two white guys.
Well, but that is true multiculturalism, though. I mean, whether it was written by a white guy or a black guy, it was filtered. In that case, it was filtered by white guys. That's true. But it's conceivable that a black sensibility would filter white things through black sensibility. The point is that there is a threading, an intermingling of different cultures, whereas the single cultural expression, it to me, is exclusionary. And I feel excluded as a white male, that's true. On the other hand, I think that's the very opposite of what people have been trying to do when we talk of integration. We haven't been talking about exclusion. We've been talking about integrating. And I think this is just another form of racism.
So it must be hard to stay a popular guy when you're basically attacking the left, the right, and the center.
I'm not popular. And that's not to say I don't want to be popular, but I'm not popular. And I continue to think my first allegiance is to try to tell the truth as I see it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that I share that allegiance with what I consider to be the genuine artist, that the artist has to tell the truth regardless of who it wounds or who it hurts. If we stop looking and confronting confronting the truth, then I think we're finished as a nation. And I think once a lie enters the fabric of our society, it meets with a number and merges and unifies with a number of other lies and makes society untenable.
Well, I want to thank you very much for taking a few minutes out of your vacation to talk with us. Thank you.
Not at all, Terry. Thank you very much for your good probing questions. I appreciated talking to you.
Robert Brustein is theater critic for The New Republic and artistic director of the American Repertory Theater. His latest book is Reimagining American Theater. This is Fresh Air.